In 1946, in Germany, there was a small group of Catholics gathered in the remains of a bombed-out church to listen to a series of talks on prayer by a young priest who's now known to us as the famous theologian Karl Rahner. And Karl Rahner stood there surrounded by this wreckage, bombed out when the Allied forces had invaded Germany, gathering with people who were still in trauma from the previous 6 years of warfare. Many of them would have lost sons in the battle, family members. They were still traumatized as stories were coming out of the real horrors of the war and the things their country had done. And this priest stood before them trying to teach them about prayer. And he said, look, the first question we need to address here is, where is God in this? You know, we've been crying out with our prayers for the last 6 years for God to do something. But even before that, back to the dawn of time, we've been crying out saying, God, save us. This cry has been going up to heaven out of people's deepest pain, saying, God, do something. And all we have heard from the heavens is silence. Absolutely nothing has come back. Where is God? Now, that was his starting point, and he clearly had a hard job of trying to then teach people how to pray. But it's a serious question, and I think this is a question we've got to face, because whether we're conscious of it or not, pretty much every person in the world is asking this question. You know, we could stand in judgment about all those who don't believe in God, those who aren't Christians. But in reality, every person comes to God out of real sincerity, saying, look, if you're there, I'm open. Do something, and I'll happily join in whatever you're doing. But this is the reality, that in those moments, we are often left in this absolute haunting silence. And I think for us as Christians, this has got to be one of the biggest questions we face. Yeah, because we can come here and kind of dress this up a little bit, can't we? You know, we have these amazing musicians over here trying to keep it all kind of upbeat and entertained. You know, I can stand up here and as a priest and dance around and tell all sorts of great jokes if I can think of them. But at the end of the day, what's God doing? Yeah, there's a lot of people who have walked away from the church because they've kind of seen through the excitement and the facade and said, well, at the end of the day, where's the big guy? What's he doing? That's the really serious question. If you go back to that story about Karl Rahner, as he wrestled with that question, he basically came up and he said, look, for all these generations where we've been crying out, throwing our prayers up to heaven, the answer that God has given is Jesus. And he actually kind of admits himself. He says, look, on the surface of it, that answer sounds really lame. You know, surely God should be providing food and taking away evil and healing people's pain. But he kind of says, actually, God's answer to all of these prayers is Jesus Christ. Now, on the surface, that's a really unsatisfying answer. But if we can start to sort of break this open and understand, what is God doing in this world? God answers the problem of pain by joining us. It makes no sense. You know, I say this to young people regularly. You know, you can leave the church for a whole range of reasons. You can disagree on church teaching for all sorts of things. None of them are really important. This is the big one why you should probably leave the church. So keep this in mind. Because what God has done is illogical. What God has done as the answer to the question makes no sense. God had the opportunity to fix the problem. He has the power. He has the opportunity. He's got legions of angels to go and do the dirty work for him. He could solve the problem of evil in an instant. Instead, he decided to be born in a cattle shed in a small, poor area in Palestine. And for the next 30 years, did nothing. It makes no sense. The heart of our faith, the whole Christ bit of being a Christian, doesn't make sense. If this is what God is actually doing to solve the problem of the world, he's not doing much. I think that if we're actually going to understand our faith, this is the question we've got to wrestle with. Because God's answer to the problem, God's answer to our prayer, is completely unorthodox. He decides to actually become human. He decides to actually enter into the suffering, to feel what you feel, the loneliness, the grief, the rejection, the absence. He takes that upon himself and he actually sits there and feels it with you. And somehow that's meant to be the solution to the problem of the world. You know, we can sit here crying out to God to do something dramatic. And this is what the second reading actually addresses. In the Old Testament, when God revealed himself for the first time, really, through Moses, God came with power. It was undeniable that God was doing stuff. When God gathered with the people on Mount Sinai to give them the covenant, to give them the law, he brought in the fireworks. There was earthquakes, there was fire, there was wind, there was stuff that would fill you with terror and say, "The Almighty is here." Clearly, we're in the presence of something all holy. Now, we respond to that sort of stuff. You know, as human beings, we like drama. And I think all of us go through life expecting that, okay, God, if you're real, you're going to do something like that. So if I sit down and pray and say, "God, show yourself," we're expecting the odd earthquake. You know, we're expecting a little bit of thunder, you know, something like that. But very often, there is just this silence. But this is what the reading says. What you have come to is not a blazing fire. It's not a total darkness. It's not a storm. It's not a trumpeting thunder. It's not a voice coming from heaven. What you have come to is nothing known to the senses. This is the key thing. What you've come to is nothing known to the senses. But it actually explains why. Because what you have come to is Mount Zion, the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. Basically what this letter is saying is, God has ripped open the heavens. In answer to your prayers, God has torn the veil. And so the dividing wall between heaven and earth has now been torn. You now stand with one foot in heaven. You have come to Mount Zion, the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. That is what you've come to. God himself has come to you. He has stepped out of heaven and he now looks you face to face. That is the answer to your prayer. He comes to you and he says, "Behold, I make all things new." That's the answer to your prayer. Now, if we were to actually see the full glory of what is in front of us, we would die. If you were to actually see this, the heavenly Jerusalem, where millions of angels are gathered for the festival, with a whole church in which everyone is a firstborn and a citizen of heaven, if we were to actually see the reality that God has brought to us, we just simply would not survive. And so in a strange way, it's actually the great mercy of God to still hide himself. Now you see this even in the ministry of Jesus. Jesus is God. Wait, can you even imagine what looking at the face of God would be? You know, Jesus has come, but he's come almost like hidden within a human form. Just an ordinary guy. You know, so often we paint pictures of Jesus to make him look awesome and amazing. He was just an ordinary guy. You know, you could walk past him on the street and not particularly sort of think, "Hey, there's God." Like, he would just look just like another guy. God comes with the ultimate answer to the question, but even then has to hide it. because it's too much for us. He starts to reveal glimpses, the miracles, the wonders, to try and show us actually heaven is broken in. You know, he says this even. He says, if the kingdom of heaven is among you, the kingdom of heaven is broken into your midst. This is what I'm starting to reveal so that your eyes would open. Thereafter the resurrection, it starts to become even more obvious. He pours out the Holy Spirit so that our eyes, our minds, our hearts would be able to see something of this glory. He gives us the ultimate presence of himself in the Eucharist. Now, once again, this is the point that really defies logic. Not only has God become human, something completely illogical, that the infinite could become finite, the all-powerful could become helpless, but now he lowers himself even more. He says, look, I want to be accessible to you every moment. And so I lower myself even further to the point of becoming like bread. In this gospel, we heard about Jesus saying, take the lowest seat at the banquet. Jesus has taken the lowest place of all. There is nothing lower than becoming a piece of bread. This is the ultimate humility of God to say, I am going to give myself to you. At every moment you need me, you cry out to me, I come into you, into your very being. But once again, if we were to see what's in front of us, our heads would explode. And so it's through this way which is not known to the senses. What we have come to is nothing known to the senses. He comes to us in this form of bread and wine. It looks so boringly ordinary. You know, to the point where you probably walk away from Mass saying, yeah, the music was good and that homily was I don't know. But the rest of it, you'll have fallen asleep through. And this is the tragedy for us as Catholics. We come here to the Eucharist, and as soon as we get past the homily, we're like, ooh, sleepy time until the Our Father. You know? But we miss that this is actually the answer to the question. God now comes here into our midst and gives himself to us. He enters into your heart, into your deepest pain, and he says, I'm there with you. If we could see this, we would realize that we are actually already in heaven. Because heaven is to be fully united with God. That's what's happening here in the Eucharist. He comes and he enters into us in a way so closely united that no one else on earth could be united with you as closely as here Christ is in the Eucharist. The only thing we need to do is to acknowledge it, to actually be conscious of it, and to actually look within ourselves and say, Lord, thank you. Thank you that you now sit in the dirt with me, that you sit in the pain with me, that you sit here in my wounds and you love me back to life. It's through our acknowledgement of it, through our awareness of it, that the real power of this starts to become alive. That's all we have to do. Open our eyes to it. We need to come into the Eucharist aware of our deep need. Sadly, many people have given up. In recent days, I've spoken to many Catholics who really just don't believe that God's doing anything anymore. In a sense, like when you get down to it, it feels like they've just given up. Let's just fix the world ourselves because he's not doing anything. Let's come here again with a renewed hope to actually give God another chance to show himself, but to realize that he's going to show himself at the very core of our being. He's going to speak deeply in that silent place, but he's going to speak with a love that is greater than anything you're going through right now. So let's come really praying in the power of the Holy Spirit, that the Spirit would really awaken us, help us to see what God is doing, help us to hear the answer to our prayers.